You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. It is Friday, time for our reporter roundtable. This is when we get you up to date on all the news that made headlines this past week. Today, our panel includes Kevin Richer, senior reporter and blogger with Idaho Ed News, Rachel Spachek with the Idaho Statesman, and Clark Corbin with the Idaho Capital Sun. Happy Friday, everybody.
Hello.
Happy Friday, Gemma. Thanks for having us on.
Thanks.
Absolutely. So, Kevin, let's start with some news in regards to COVID and mask mandates. So, once again, school districts have been making decisions about this. Can you tell us, first off, where are we at with school districts like West Ada and Caldwell? But then from there, talk about the decision that the Boise School District recently made.
Right. So there's a bit of a departure there between West Ada and Caldwell and Boise. West Ada and Caldwell had lifted their mask mandates a few weeks ago. I think West Ada's was lifted right after the Thanksgiving break. Boise School Board met on Monday, and in essence, they didn't make a decision, which means in essence that the mask mandate will remain in place for the time being, probably until February. And I think that the concern that was raised on Monday night, and trustees met with, at least virtually met with health officials leading up to their decision to keep the mask mandate in place. The concern is right now, even though some of the numbers are improving, there's a lot of uncertainty out there. The numbers are still fairly high, and now we have questions about what could come with the Omicron variant. We don't know what to expect in terms of how transmissible that variant is. Indications are it's very transmittable. And questions about the severity of that variant as opposed to the preceding variant. So I think school trustees in Boise looked at the situation and said, we don't know enough. And we don't know where this is going to be in a few weeks. So let's keep the mask mandate in place.
And with that said, Kevin, what kind of response have they gotten since they made that decision? I read the article about certain parents, certain groups not being necessarily thrilled about the idea of keeping the mask mandate in place.
I think as we head out of 2021 and into 2022, there is no decision that school boards can make about masks that will make everybody happy. I think any decision you make will make a lot of people angry. I think if Boise had lifted its mask mandate as West Ada had a few weeks ago, you would be hearing a different backlash from a different cohort of parents, as West Ada has heard since deciding to lift its mask mandate. Trustees are in a no-win situation and have been in a no-win situation for months and months.
And with that said, Kevin, my understanding is that we don't do contact tracing in the schools anymore. So even though West Ada has lifted the mask mandate and it's optional, we don't necessarily know how it's going. Is correct?
I think that too varies from district to district, but you are right. Some districts decided early on that they don't have the resources to do contact tracing. I think some districts were running into resistance from parents as they tried to do contact tracing. Parents not cooperating with district officials as they tried to get a sense of what was going on. And I think sometimes parents don't really know everything about who their kids hang out with, who they eat lunch with, who they sit next to on the bus. So contact tracing is a difficult thing to do anyway. But I think when you factor in the resources and maybe some of the COVID fatigue in households, contact tracing, well, I think it's probably the optimal thing to do. It's a tough thing to do.
Right. And we should note just today, the CDC, there's a report out that they're recommending what's being called a test to stay policy. Which your child can be tested, and then that therefore, if a COVID test comes back negative, they can stay in person learning. They wouldn't have to quarantine as much, and maybe something like that would help. So we will, as we go into the net and as we get past the holidays and we get kids back to school in January, we'll have to see where we are with that. Clark, let's switch gears a bit. You have been talking writing quite a bit and paying attention to redistricting here in Idaho. What is the latest with this? Because there were certain deadlines that had to be met.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been following this since the process started in September. And the latest is just this week, there were two brand new challenges filed against the redistricting plan, asking the Idaho Supreme Court to basically throw out both the legislative plan and the congressional plan. And just real quickly, redistricting is something that happens every 10 years. It happens in Idaho. It happens in states all across the country. I think a lot of us will remember filling out those 2020 census forms. This is one of the things that we use that new census data for. The idea with redistricting is that Idaho in particular, and all the states have experienced growth over the last 10 years since the last redistricting plan. And redistricting is required by both the U.S. Constitution and the Idaho Constitution. And what it is it's redrawing the state's political boundaries with the idea that we want population within those boundaries to be as equal as possible. It's kind of the idea behind this principle of one person and one vote. And so the plan was actually finalized and voted on in November. And now we're seeing these challenges come forward. And it's kind of down to the wire at this point, after kind of building up and trickling out, because this this plan would be, in fact, starting with the primary elections, which right now are scheduled for May 17th. And we had a plan challenged. The congressional plan was challenged this week by an Elmore County man who says that the congressional plan improperly splits up precincts. And we had an interesting challenge against the legislative plan filed by both the Shoshone-Bannock tribes and the Coeur d'Alene tribes. And what the tribes are saying is that the legislative plans completely split up their reservations and divide them in half. That's a challenge that I would really watch going forward. They have a couple of high-powered attorneys representing the tribes, including Deb Ferguson from here in Boise. And the tribes had spoken out all throughout the redistricting process. They came and testified at public meetings. They asked to be included. They basically said, we're a community of interest with our tribe and our reservation land, and we want that to be respected. They wrote a letter to commissioners, and then just this week, they filed the challenge. And so what's going to happen next is, starting in January, the Idaho Supreme Court is going to start hearing oral arguments on some of these challenges. And it's going to be a pretty tight window and turnaround to get those challenges heard, to decide what's going to happen, and then still have our primary elections on time. And so I do think that there's a possibility that if the redistricting plans get thrown out, or if this court process is drawn out, that could delay having our primary on time in May. And so that could get really, really interesting. But yeah, after months of kind of building up and moving slowly, it's really down to the wire now. The plans have been approved, like I said, and now they're being challenged. And we're kind of like right at the last minute to see if we'll be able to get this done, or to see whether the plans are thrown out. And if the Supreme Court does throw out either the legislative or the congressional plan, it seems likely that our redistricting commission would be sent back to work to draw new maps. And then who knows how long that takes. But Idaho is interesting in that it truly has a bipartisan redistricting commission. There were six people who drew these maps starting September 1st, and it was six people altogether, three appointed by Democrats, three appointed by Republicans. And the legislative plan in particular was approved unanimously. There's all these different factors they have to balance, but it really comes down to, how do you divide the state up for terms of political representation? And so I think really these oral arguments that are going to begin next month in January, and then how the Supreme Court looks at this, I think is going to be really interesting and really important. There's a lot of nuance in there, but it all comes down to who you're going to be able to vote for in the elections starting next year, who's going to represent you and your neighbors in the legislature and in Congress. And the technical stuff really comes down to, how do we divide up the state of Idaho? And those are kind of the unanswered questions right now.
Yeah. And frankly, it's kind of like when you say, you know, who will we vote for? Well, at this point, if redistricting, they have to go back to the table clerk. I mean, it's kind of like, who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Immediately after the redistricting plan was first approved in November, we started seeing campaign announcements. If this plan is thrown out, that's going to change some of that. And so it could be really interesting where we could have some contested primaries with multiple incumbents drafted into the same districts, or there may be a wait and see period if this plan is thrown out. So it's going to be really interesting for people who follow government and politics and elections and things like that. So it should be pretty interesting for our Friday talks going forward, especially once the session begins, once we hear these court cases start taking place.
Yeah. So, Rachel, you just wrote an article recently about speed limits in Ada County. This might seem like it's not that big of a deal, but man, Rachel, we're talking about folks going in excess of 100 miles per hour on the interstate in Ada County.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. There might be some listeners right now driving on the interstate who are like getting
slow down in the
fast lane. But so basically this story honestly came up because one of my editors was like, oh, yeah, between, I think he was driving between like Meridian and Boise, and he was like, people are driving really fast. And it turns out that he was correct. Idaho State Police has been issuing speeding tickets for people speeding 15 miles per hour or more on the interstate. And those tickets have been increasing since 2018. That's the longest day that I've gotten. But so far this year, they've given out a little over 1,300 tickets. That's a little under the 2020 ticket number. But the police sergeant I talked to was like, we're kind of moving in that direction. And I don't think we're going to surpass it because there is like a week or two maybe left of the year. But and it's also, you know, not only speeds, but, you know, with excessive speeds, there are also crashes that happen, unfortunately. And the sergeant I talked to said that in our district where Ada County is and Canyon County is, we're averaging 45 to 50 crashes a week, which is high. And most of those are on the interstate. So people should be careful, especially with any holiday travel happening on the roads, slow down and just be careful.
So Rachel, did they give any reasoning as to why people are speeding more? I mean, I realize that was it 2014-ish or so where the speed limit was raised at 80 miles per hour in certain parts of the interstate.
Yeah.
But I mean, but when you look between Boise and I think it's Napa, maybe to Caldwell, the speed limit is 65 still.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that 2014 increase was just in rural areas. They had a big campaign. A lot of Western states, they had a big campaign in the summer, you know, because people were getting back on the road after, you know, quarantining and, social distancing with COVID. And, you know, they were noticing those trends happening, you know, way back in the summer. But the sergeant I talked to was basically like, people are late for things and they're speeding, trying to get home, trying to get to work. So I think, you know, now the trend is just like the usual stuff, people being late.
Kevin, let's talk higher ed enrollment, where it is and what this means.
Take a closer look at the higher education enrollment numbers that we saw this fall. And we've talked about this before, but what I find really, really interesting is how we're seeing an increasing share of students coming into the universities, coming into the state institutions from outside of Idaho. And whether we're talking about Boise State University or the University of Idaho or Idaho State, a disproportionate share of the enrollment growth that they saw this year came from out-of-state students. So while the colleges and universities did see a rebound in enrollment, they gained back most of the enrollment they lost in 2020 during the pandemic. It's really interesting to me where it comes from, because this raises all kinds of interesting policy questions about, first of all, why are we seeing more students coming in from outside of Idaho as opposed to students in state going to college? And it raises a lot of questions about how we're funding higher education. What are we funding in higher education? How does this affect the bottom line for colleges and universities? Because let's face it, these out-of-state students pay more to come to school in Idaho. It's just a very fascinating, multi-tiered policy debate and political issue. And we just wanted to explore it a little bit more this week.
So, Clark, talk to us about a legislative preview that you're putting together. What are some of the highlights of what we could expect this session?
Yeah, that's really how I've been spending this past week, is kind of getting geared up for the new legislative session. I know it feels
good
like
times.
We were just back at the state capitol, because we were in November.
Because you were.
Yeah. And the new session kicks off January 10th with Governor Brad Little's State of the State address. And I invite Kevin and Rachel to jump in at any point. But I think that once again, this is going to be a critical year for education. And I think there's a couple of things to watch for. I think that conservatives on the far right, who are aligned with the Idaho Freedom Foundation, are going to continue to push back against education, particularly higher education. We saw the lieutenant governor's education, quote unquote, indoctrination task force over the summer, where they made a lot of talk about things like critical race theory, but had trouble defining it and had trouble pointing to instances of it actually happening in Idaho schools. And so I think there will be more of that like before. But I do think talking with House Minority Leader Alana Rubel, a Democrat from Boise, talking with Senator Jim Woodward, a Republican from North Idaho, I think this is going to be a year with a big push for optional all-day kindergarten in the state of Idaho, which would be huge. Right now, the state of Idaho only pays for half-day kindergarten, and that's optional. But it sounds like between some movement that happened over the last couple of years, some action by the State Board of Education, this mounting budget surplus that the state has. I mean, the state of Idaho, once again, is just sitting on a pile of money with revenues up. The state, under some projections, could end the next budget year with a surplus of something like $1.6 billion with a B, dollars, which would be another state record. But I'd be curious what Kevin or Rachel are hearing about education, because I do think there's going to be legislators from both parties who are going to work on optional all-day kindergarten, which would be that early, would be a piece of early childhood education. I'm curious what Kevin's hearing from his sources.
Well, I think
Kevin,
you hit it on the head.
I'm curious.
No, I think, Clark, you hit it on the head. I think all-day kindergarten is going to be one of the big debates in education this year. And when you're sitting on a $1.6 billion surplus, even if that's a lot of one-time money, there's going to be a lot of impetus towards putting some of that money, some of that surplus money into all-day kindergarten. You know, you've got Republican legislators on board with the idea, partly because they like the idea of moving all-day kindergarten to state funding and getting it off of local property taxes. Education groups are aligned behind the idea. Business groups are aligned. So you've got critical mass there. So I think that's going to be a big topic. Another one, and Clark, you've got plenty of history covering this. Academic standards are going to come back. We're going to have a debate about English language arts, math standards, and those ever popular science standards. That's going to be a hot button issue, and that's going to take up a good chunk of the early part of the session, I would imagine.
Yeah, education is always big. It's historically been the largest source of general fund state funding just until the last couple of years. But there have been groups that have been working on all-day kindergarten behind the scenes for years and years and years. And really, even having optional half-day kindergarten is something that the late Governor Cecil Andrus really pushed for and was a real accomplishment as part of his legacy. And so this is something that's been building. You know, obviously, we still have to have the session. We still have to see the proposals. We still have to have the debate and the vote. Nothing is guaranteed in the Idaho legislature, as all of us know.
That's true.
But it could be a huge debate. And this push for expanding kindergarten to make it available all throughout the state to families has been going on for just years and years and years. And so it will be a big debate. But Kevin said he's exactly right. These debates over academic standards have been very divisive in the past really 6 years. to the point where we had the House Education Committee trying to repeal all academic standards and then getting kind of the showdown with the Senate Education Committee. And so the politics of it are fascinating. But along with the budget talk, along with, you know, picking up where we left off in November with some of the COVID-19 restrictions and vaccination mandates and so forth, I really think this is a big education year, as many years are, but this could be a historic year on the education front.
I'm also wondering, Clark, if you've been hearing about any property tax stuff. You know, I know you guys are very focused on education, but I mean, I know in my coverage areas, cities are not happy with the property tax bills that went through last session. So I'm just wondering if that might be a big one too.
Right before the segment started today, I was on the phone with House Minority Leader Ilana Rubel, and she said property taxes are going to be a big push. And she kind of had two ideas for helping out with property taxes. One, she wanted to take the money that is collected on internet sales tax and free that up to send that back to local governments, schools, cities, and counties. Right now, that money all goes into basically a tax cut savings fund. She wants to treat it like sales tax collections from brick and mortar and have that money freed up to go to local governments. She thinks that could reduce the burden on property taxes. She also thinks providing state funding for all day kindergarten could relieve the burden for some of the school districts that have already moved to all day kindergarten, but are funding it through local options like a levy or a bond. And so Representative Rubel said that she's heard from Republicans and Democrats alike who really want to focus on property taxes this year because residents have seen their tax bills increase like 25-30%. And I don't think they're seeing services increase at a corresponding rate. Representative Rubel was quite candid. She said she blames the legislature for a lot of the property tax problems we're seeing in the state of Idaho. And she says it's up to the legislature to fix it. And she hopes they make progress this year.
Kevin, I know we talked a little bit with Clark earlier about the redistricting. Can you get us up to date on another potential legislative GOP primary showdown? This time, it could be happening in Boise.
Right. And I think this one's interesting because I think it symbolizes maybe what could be a larger trend in these elections. So Fred Martin is a Republican senator from Boise. He represents District 15, which right now is maybe one of the few battleground legislative districts in the state. It's in West Boise, kind of, you know, near Meridian. It's skewed. It's really skewed purple. I mean, you've had a mixed delegation the past couple of election cycles. And Senator Martin, I think you would describe as maybe more of a moderate Republican. He could get an opponent from the right, Cody Galloway, a first-term House member who is considerably more conservative, is saying that she's planning to run in that district. And she's running, and she's making no bones about that she feels like she wants to run because she feels like conservatives need to have more seats in the state Senate because ideas that are coming from the House that the House passes are dying in the Senate. And she wants to push a more conservative agenda in the Senate. And this is Clark was talking before about redistricting and how the new legislative map could force contested primaries. It could force incumbents to run against each other as the districts change. Which will happen if that map survives the court challenges. That we'll definitely see some contested primaries because of redistricting, because of the way the map is redrawn. But this is one potential primary that really doesn't have much to do with redistricting. I mean, I think just about any way you draw the map, whether you stick with the map that was approved a few weeks ago, or if you go back to the drawing board, pretty good chance that Fred Martin and Cody Galloway are going to be in the same legislative district anyway. And Galloway is got her eyes on the Senate. She would like to run in the Senate. Martin hasn't said what his plans are, but that's a district to watch, and I think that's potentially a race to watch.
And Rachel, you went out into the field talking with some Caldwell farmers. We have about not much time, only about a minute left or so. Can you quickly just tell us about that?
Yeah, so I'd really encourage people to read the piece, but basically I met with a bunch of former farm workers who had lived in the labor camp in Caldwell, and they talked about, you know, their life and their work out in the fields and living in these really small quarters. And yeah, soon people can get out to Farmway Village just outside of Caldwell to visit this interpretive center to learn more about farm workers and their contributions to Idaho.
I want to thank all of you for your time today, as always, taking time out on a Friday to talk with us. We have been talking with Kevin Richard. He is the senior reporter and blogger with the Idaho Ed News. Rachel Spachek with the Idaho Statesman, and Clark Corbin with the Idaho Capital Sun. And remember, if you have not subscribed to these news services, I would encourage you to do so. We've got some great journalism in our area. Thanks, all three of you, so much.
Thanks, Gemma.
Thank you.
We will have more Idaho Matters next.